right, okay. Back it in, Hayden. Go on, slowly, back in. Back in. Right, okay.
Mind your feet. There we go.
Okay. All right, boys, you just start unloading the toilet rolls, please, while we go and do some podcasting. Thanks. Happy day, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 129 of the Diddly Dum Podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
And I'm Mark.
Right. Well, before we get on to the final two episodes of Series 12, have we got any news? We've had some very nice feedback, as you may be aware, of the last four or five podcasts. My mum's been downloading it and listening to it, and I got an email from her when I got home tonight saying, Dear Doc, I listened last night and actually got to the end without nodding off. Well done. Love, Mum.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I think she listens to it in bed with earphones on, and if she nods off, then she can't remember where she got up to, so she has to start listening to it again. That's torture for anyone, isn't it? Any other news have been happening?
I noticed they've re-released the B&M are putting out the character options figures, the same ones that they put out last year, but with slightly different paint jobs and I think slightly different face sculpts.
Right, okay.
Which is good because I missed out on getting a third Doctor and TARDIS set last time. So yeah, when I say it's the same ones as last year, it's the third Doctor and the TARDIS. Then there's three from Big Finish Stories, with a 7th, 8th, and the War Doctor.
Right.
Each with a Dalek.
Mm. What, in a single box?
No. But it'll be interesting to see if they all get snaffled up by scalpers again, isn't it?
So. Yeah. Mm. You might have to wait till Christmas again, Mark.
Yes.
Blu-rays have been delayed again, haven't they?
Yes, they have, yes. But I also wanted just to just mention as well that obviously the weekend just gone when we're recording this, it was the BFI showing of the Faceless Ones.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that's coming out in a couple of weeks' time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's already available on download.
Yes, yeah, which is really odd.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, which I don't quite understand. I think, judging from what I've seen on Facebook and Twitter, it looks as though they've sort of manipulated the look of Michael Kray's as Ben, obviously. Apparently looks a bit more like Ben does, because I think last time, I don't think they quite captured him very well, had they? But apparently there are a few tweaks, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Can't remember if it's this weekend.
Yeah, so am I. I wonder if it might be cheaper to buy it on download now, if we want to watch it, and then presumably it's going to turn up on one of the Blu-ray collection box sets. So then we'll actually own a physical copy. So it might not be worth,
possibly.
I don't know, investing in a physical copy just yet.
You know, a couple of episodes ago, we had a chance encounter with the Ovaltinis.
Hmm.
Oh, how can I forget?
I've been doing some research on it, and I was looking at what sort of things you got if you applied to become a member of the Ovaltinis, like my dad did. And along with membership badges and various other things, you didn't get a membership book. You got an official rule book.
Ooh!
So now if you're,
oh my God!
If you're setting up a children's society to promote a malt-based drink, you think it's strange to have an official rule book, wouldn't you? That's slightly I know that was still in our empire building days, but it sounds slightly over the top. Anyway, I thought if you remember the Ovaltini song, computer. I thought, I've rather fallen out of love with our original official Diddly Dum song to the Spider-Man tune, so I thought I'd try out one to the Ovaltinis tune. If you'll If you'll humour me, boys.
All right, we better strap ourselves in here, Mark.
That's all, I'm used to it.
And it would go a bit like this. We are the Diddly Dummers, the podcasting boys. Send no requests, we'll just refuse you. We are not here to amuse you. What's our favourite Doctor Who story, merchandise or toy? Don't listen to iTunes, we're not clean. Sometimes polite, sometimes obscene. And do we all drink Ovaltine? No, mainly Dandelion and Burdock. Or Calvados if we have company. Anyway, that amused me. But then I've been much in need of amusement lately. Do we have anything else to add, or should we go swing straight in?
I can't think of anything, so go for it.
The last two episodes of Series 12 were Ascension of the Cybermen and The Timeless Children.
I don't like that sharp intake of breath that you do every time. I kind of think to myself, right, I better sit down because I think I know what I'm going to get from Doc here.
Shall I start off?
Yeah, go on then.
I thought it started promisingly enough with all the Cyberman parts floating through space. Mm. But again, that's visuals, isn't it? And there's never been any doubt that under Chris Chibnall, the visuals are relatively top-notch. All the rest of it seems to be really just a bit of a runaround, really. Running from baddies who can't shoot straight. If the cyber drones had stayed around, not been replaced by actual Cybermen, the story might have been over in 5 minutes. Because they actually seem to be able to shoot straight. The thing which rescues the story for me is the thing which rescued Villa Diodati, and that's Arshad, the lone Cyberman.
Oh, yeah.
And I think as good as the new design for the Cybermen look, with the old-style flat face, I think it's probably impractical, but if Arshad was taken as the design template for the Cybermen, I don't necessarily mean with half his face still there, I reckon that they might be a serious menace again. Or at least scary again. If you watch him walking around that ship, accompanied by his two sort of Cybus-era sidekicks, his silhouette and his movement is genuinely creepy. Because it's quite human in its movement, although being robotic in appearance. The other two Cybermen are sort of, you know, walking very sharp angles, when he's sort of walking around like a person. And next to him, the other Cybermen are just steel dolls stomping around. And while we're on that, haven't we reached the point where the hammer on the anvil stomping has had its day? They just don't look that heavy to justify it. Certainly not when they're walking on grass, which seems to make no difference.
Is it a bit like with them on Her Majesty's Secret Service when George Lazenby drives the Aston Martin on the sand and you hear the tyres screeching?
Oh, do you? Oh, dear. But going back to what I was saying, if they could find a way of moving them back to the Mondasian idea of the Cybermen, it would be a great improvement. Look at 10th Planet. Their voices and their movement and their design were scary exactly because we could see that they were converted men.
Yeah.
And when Russell T. Davis changed the design to make them, was it 2006? To make them look like really just another robot. I think we lost that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing really scary about a robot having a robotic voice. And they're just another unstoppable force, which is why they only ever really look impressive these days if there are dozens of them stomping in a row. So if they could find a way to rehumanise the Cybermen while retaining the lack of emotion, which probably seems a contradiction, that might restore their effectiveness. Because I think the only virtue they have, the Cybermen, have ever really had, as far as impact goes, is the body horror aspect. And if you're going to ditch that just to turn them into a convenient army for the Master to use, then they might as easily be the Toclophane. Would any of us really care? They seem to be almost pointless here. They no longer have the slightest interest, apparently, in turning humans into Cybermen and upgrading them. Now they just want to destroy humans. Seems a little strange to me. In my view, the only really decent thing in Ascension of the Cybermen was the whole Brendan story in Ireland.
Yes.
Each time they switched over to Ireland, it was almost like a slap in the face, in a good way, if that such thing exists. We suddenly had people I was interested in, and questions I was interested in. Who's the baby? Why are we in Ireland? Why is he joining the police? How can the baby have aged to retirement while his adoptive father and the policeman have stayed young? Now, that really was a whoa surprise. You know, when he comes out of his retirement with his little carriage clock.
Yes.
And you suddenly see that they're still the same age. What are they doing to him in that back room?
Yeah, that bit, it sort of took me back to that sort of like exciting mystery like we had with the Fugitive of the Judoon. It's that thing which,
yes,
it was mysterious and it was well executed and it made you want to know exactly what was going on. And it also, it sort of sparks off loads of crazy theories in your head. And I always find that's one of the most exciting parts of a season, which we didn't get last year at all. We didn't have any moments like that. And this year we got that. But as always, with any of these mysteries, it's always how it's resolved that's the make or break, isn't it, for the story, really.
Or not resolved at all, maybe.
Well, that's been the story ever since Doctor Who came back in 2005,
yeah,
hasn't it? I can probably list on one hand the amount of stories that actually resolve that arc in a very, you know, satisfying way. And I'm actually doing it in my head now as you talk.
Yeah, every finale has basically been the question, can showrunner X actually land this final episode or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes they have, and many times they haven't.
Well, you've got some wonderful examples where I think they did. And I mean, on a personal note, I think the likes of The Parting of the Ways and Journey's End. I actually think as well that The Pandorica Opens and The Big Bang is probably the most satisfying of the Matt Smith endings. And of course, World Enough and Time and The Doctor Falls. And that might be it for me, actually. I can't think of too many others.
And I think what's interesting about that is, I think that's true despite the fact that, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but when in Party of the Ways, when Rose waves her hand and the letters Bad Wolf, you know, come off the wall.
I am the Bad Wolf. I create myself. I take the words. I scatter them. In time and space. A message to leave myself here.
I almost slightly groaned to myself. Oh dear, that's a bit corny. And I couldn't help thinking, you know, that whole thing about the Doctor gets locked in the Pandorica, and then the next thing we know, Amy's in there.
Yeah.
And it's that, what's it called? A paradox thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's not entirely satisfying, but it really worked despite that because there was emotion in there.
Yeah.
And interestingly about those two things, you both know how much I like Series 1.
Yes.
Every time I watch that thing, even though, yes, it is a bit of a deus ex machina, or dea ex machina, that Rose suddenly becomes the goddess of time and, you know, wipes everything out. But when the Doctor falls on his backside and says, what have you done? And she says, I wanted you safe, my Doctor.
Yeah.
Every time, still now, 15 years later, I'm in floods of tears watching that.
You've got the entire vortex running through your head. You're going to burn.
I want you safe. My Doctor.
And in the Big Bang, where the Doctor's just about to step through the crack, you know, Amy's asleep in bed, and he's saying to her,
I don't belong here anymore. I think I'll skip the rest of the rewind. I hate repeats. Live well. Love Rory. Bye bye, Bob.
Again, I always burst into tears when I see that. I've not seen that for a long time. So I think that I couldn't really care that much. I mean, it would be great if it worked, whether, you know, a plot neatly fits in. But as long as I care about the plot, you know, and I care about the people, and it's, I guess, an emotional and dramatic response from it, that's fine from me. It's almost as if you're sitting there thinking, A bit like putting up a tent, you know. Pole B doesn't exactly slot into flange A, does it? Then I think you're only doing that because you're not emotionally engaged with it. You know, you're able to sit back and just be quite technical with it. So we'll see shortly whether this two-part finale works in the same way for us. Just sit at home, listeners, on the edge of your seats.
I bet they can't guess.
Desperately think, oh, what will Doc be thinking? So what did we think?
On our internal communication systems, you two were talking, I thought, giving away subtle hints as to what you may have thought to this.
Because our bedrooms are in different wings of the Whoseum, listeners. We have strings stretching between them with little paper cups at the end, and we use them as telephones for each other. Sorry, Hayden, what were you saying?
I was trying to sort of keep shtum, because I wanted to save all of my opinions for this episode.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I get the feeling that I think we're going to differ with what we're going to say. So before we fall out, I just want to say it's been a pleasure knowing you all. No, it's no, I just think, funnily enough, Ascension of the Cybermen I found a little boring. I wasn't fully on board with it. And within about 25 minutes, I was already looking at my phone, which is, I have to say, something I haven't really done. Actually, for the vast majority of this season, I haven't been looking at my phone. I found this season more fun. Yes, I know there's still an awful lot of Basil exposition, which for me ruins it. And yes, I still think Three Companions is too much. But apart from that, I think actually that this is a huge improvement on Series 11. Vast improvement.
Oh, as a series overall, yes.
Yeah, yeah. However, in Ascension, I was getting echoes of the Battle of Ranskorav Kolos, or the Battle of Avenue Q, whatever you want to call it. I just kind of thought, well, after 20 minutes, we're still in, you know, that sort of abandoned area, and you know, you've had the cyber heads flying along, which at which point I thought that was sort of cyber shade level of crapness, I thought. I can sort of see what they were thinking. But what's wrong with cybermats? I don't understand why that wouldn't have been. I mean, were they thinking, oh, maybe it won't be as visually striking?
I think they're easier to run away from.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That is absolutely true.
Although, I mean, the old 60s cybermats, yeah, but I remember almost peeing my pants at cybermats on Nerva Beacon. You know, the ones that used to leap up and inject you.
The long ones, yeah. Yeah, the long ones.
The Hoover attachments.
Yeah, I was getting a bit bored of that, and I wasn't completely on board with the little Earthbound Resistance people, so I wasn't really on board with Ravio or Yedlami or Beskot or Ethan, and I don't know. It was... Why are you laughing?
It's just that list of...
Yedlami.
...names. I can't tell if you're making them up or if they were the ones.
I know!
Nobody knows!
I know, it wouldn't really matter, would it?
I thought that you were about to say that I can't believe that you're reading this from Wikipedia. But you know how bad my pronunciation of these characters are.
It was a very dramatic moment when Gribbler 12 died.
You've just given away my Twitter handle now. I don't want the listeners to know where I am. Oh, dear. I sort of think that Ascension was the weaker of the two episodes, if we're going to speak about them collectively. Mm-hmm. Which I think is what I'm guessing to here. I think there was enough in The Timeless Children to keep me entertained. There were moments where I definitely had shocks. Well, didn't we all? And there were moments where I thought, yes, you know, this is working for me. I know I don't sound very sure about that. But I think this is one of those episodes where maybe time has to pass before I can give it a full sort of examination, as it were. I don't just mean weeks and months. I think possibly years for me to go back to it and think, oh, yes, I like what they did here. The one criticism, well, I say one criticism, one of my criticisms, though, of the story overall is this. Now, I've seen an awful lot of people online speaking about, you know, obviously they've played with the lore of the show again, you know, and this time out, the Doctor turns out to be the... Oh, spoiler alert! The Doctor turns out to be the Timeless Child, comes from another reality, found near a portal, has had copious amounts of lives in the past that we've hitherto never known about, lives that we definitely don't know about. I just think the trouble... I mean, yeah, okay. Be brave with the canon. Introduce something new. And I think the way that it's been done doesn't take away from the mystery of the Doctor. I think it adds to the mystery of the Doctor that you don't know how many lives the Doctor has had now. I think there's always been a problem, though, with such a long-running series that when you get so many showrunners and so many people trying to put their stamp on it, inconsistencies start to creep in. And I think now, I think the trouble with this Timeless Child plot arc is it makes the backstory incredibly messy. If it wasn't messy already, it's very messy now.
Oh, yes, I have to agree. I mean, we are skipping forward here. I haven't mentioned anything about Ascension yet, but...
Oh, sorry. That's because I've been talking for 48 years, Mark. That's why.
But, you know, this is like, if this whole thing, it seems to have been thought up just to... It's basically like Chris Chibnall's been looking at the brain of Morbius and the Morbius doctors and thinking, oh, one day I'm really going to have to sort that out. It's really bugging me. And now he's got his chance. And it's something that hasn't bothered anyone else. Well, you know, not in a major way. People just sort of wave it aside. It happened. It doesn't need explaining. You know, we can argue about it and theorise about it amongst ourselves. That's all fine. But it's for me, this is a bit like as if I'd gone to... if I'd got a small tattoo that I didn't like on my back somewhere that I couldn't see and I'd sort of half forgotten about. And Chris Chibnall comes up to me and says, Mark, I could get rid of that tattoo for you. So I say to him, oh, really? Go ahead, be my guest. And then I go to sleep and I wake up and I've been tattooed from head to toe like a zebra. And I say, what the hell have you done to me? And he says, well, you can't see that tattoo now, Mark. But now I look like a bloody zebra.
Are we slightly, we've almost deserted Ascension, we've gone straight back into the second one now?
Because I think you've kind of got to talk to them as an overall story, really, haven't they?
I hate it, moved on a bit.
Sorry, that's completely my fault. I do apologise.
Shall I say something about Ascension before we...
Yeah, carry on.
Like Doc said, I think this is a great-looking episode again. Don't think we've got any qualms about that. I tend to agree with Hayden. I don't think an awful lot really happened in it. It was a bit flat. It was very much Battle of Ranscor, /. And why are the Cybermen such terrible shots? I mean, what's happened to their targeting systems? I've no idea.
Well, the trouble with that is that you can't have the Cybermen shooting your protagonists.
Well, no, obviously you can't.
So what else do you do then? I mean, you've got to have them shooting and people ducking and diving and getting out of the way, or you're killing off your entire cast before the start. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know, but there's so many across both of these two episodes. There's so much shooting from the Cybermen, and it's only the cyber drones, I think, isn't it? They actually managed to kill people. Oh, and Ashad manages to shoot someone. Apart from that, I don't think did any of the Cybermen actually manage to. Oh, yes, they shot, checks notes, Bescott on the cyber ship, didn't they? The girl with the woolly hat on.
I'll take your word for it, I don't remember.
But I do still wonder about the writing. It does seem to be another one, a little bit like Praxeus, which is, watch this, enjoy it, but please don't actually think about it too much. And I mean, from the very start, I know the Doctor says, I've landed the TARDIS exactly where Shelley's coordinates put us. But they obviously know where the settlement is because they leave the TARDIS and walk there. So considering that they're trying to save the last few humans on Earth and they've got all this equipment to carry, why do they park it half a mile away? She could just enter the atmosphere near the coordinates, find out where the camp is, which presumably is what she does before leaving the TARDIS anyway, and then land in the middle of the settlement. It doesn't make any sense to me.
She seems to be encouraging their cardiovascular build-up, aren't they? Because in the previous story, The Haunting, she parked about a mile away again.
Well, yeah, this is true. But as we've seen in many other stories, she's quite happy to, if the narrative suits it, she's quite happy to do short hops and stuff, isn't she? I don't know. I just find things like that tend to throw me out a bit.
Yeah.
Another one of the things is there's a cyber carrier full of cyber warriors.
And no.
hundreds of thousands of them, or 100,000 of them, and Ashad is struggling around with these two old Cybermen and a bunch of drones. How does he not... He must know about this ship. And surely the Cyberium knows. I mean, the Cyberium, as they keep saying, knows everything, knows all of cyber history. Why doesn't Cyberium say to him, look, there's a great big ship up there full of cyber warriors. Why don't you go and awaken them? Why spend... You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
It's one of those things where they have to say to us, please don't look at this too close, isn't it?
Exactly. This is why they try and keep forcing it along, like forcing the adventure along with these sort of set pieces and little bits. And like I say, it is, look at the pretty pictures. Don't think about the plot too much, please. And also, if there's a derelict cyber ship in space, how come it's got oxygen on it?
No, but do they need human beings alive before they convert them, though?
Possibly, but I mean, everything else, all the other systems on the ship are down, aren't they?
Oh, what about Ashad?
Oh,
yes. He's only half, isn't he?
So yeah, but Ashad's not on that ship. Ashad's not been on that ship. Ashad's on a different ship. So you've got this place. All the systems are shut down, apart from, fortunately, oxygen and gravity, which luckily both still work. And also, luckily, is the fact that all the doors and controls respond to human touch, as opposed to Cyberman touch. Every single door. It's bewildering. I can't remember which story it is now, but I think it's probably... Is it in one of the stories? Graham runs through a doorway and then turns around, presses the button on it, which then the other Cybermen trying to get through it can't get through it. How can the Cybermen not open one of the doors on their own ship? How's Graham been able to lock it?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, I find stuff like that just really...
Now, I've got to say, what this is a sign of, Mark, is the fact that the story wasn't working for you for this to wind you up this much.
No, possibly not.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I was just thinking there, I don't really want us to get into a list of things that don't work out, but actually Hayden's right. Mark wouldn't be caring if the story was actually engaging him.
Yeah. I compare it to something from another episode? In The Runaway Bride, the Doctor and Donna escape from the Rachnos by him snapping his sonic screwdriver, and that beams them aboard the TARDIS. He does something on the sonic screwdriver, and they sort of melt away underground and then rematerialise inside the TARDIS. And then you sort of think, well, why doesn't he do that every single episode when he's in trouble then? And that just took me completely out of the story when that happened. Yeah, so I know what you mean.
Well, it's the problem. It's the same problem as being able to pilot the TARDIS exactly, isn't it?
Once you
introduce that, then you do start saying, why didn't they just... You know, in the Fourth Doctor's day, it wouldn't be a surprise they'd landed 5 miles away.
No.
Sarah would have just said something like, oh, yep, can't you fix this old bucket of bolts?
But for me, that works. All thanks to the line from Idris in The Doctor's Wife, when he says, you never took me where I wanted to go. And she says, no, but I always took you where you needed to go.
That was very good, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Doctor, in Ascension of the Cybermen, needed to go to that camp. And instead, he dropped half a mile away with a load of equipment to carry. So bad, Idris.
That is true. Idris was having an off day.
Okay, well, yeah, I have to say I agree with Doc about the Brendan stuff. Like I said earlier, that was intriguing and beautifully done, I thought.
What did you think at the end when they take his clock off him?
Yeah.
And they stick that headset on him? What did you think was happening? For that middle week between the two episodes, what did you think was... Because I think that three of us agree this is the only interesting part of the story, the Brendan thing. What did you think was happening? What did you think the explanation was going to be? I mean, personally, I thought that Brendan was Bruno Langley. It was going to be Adam coming back.
Yeah, about that.
Because people were saying, is he the Doctor? Is he the Master? Is he Arshad? Because I was thinking, oh, that is a clock. Is that, the fob watch in the Chameleon Arch? That thing they're putting on his head, is that a bit like the Chameleon Arch? Is it the Doctor? And I couldn't work out why they were younger than him. It's always very confusing, but at least it was interesting.
I have to say, I mean, I did enjoy those moments, and I enjoyed the mystery, and I enjoyed, once again, the fact that it seems to be harking back. I mean, obviously we only knew this after the end of... See, I'm finding it very difficult to talk about Ascension without talking about the Timeless Children, I have to say. But I liked how it linked back to that, to the division from Fugitive of the Jadoon. Mm. You know, with what was said on the clock, you know, like this older version of the Doctor was doing jobs and missions. I don't know why they'd be in Ireland, but anyway. But again, inconsistencies. Why is it that when Brendan falls from the cliff, he doesn't change his appearance? And yet,
well,
we see the old man, who's clearly Brendan, but then the others are still young. I don't get that.
Yeah, it's perhaps, you could say that, oh, what's the woman's name? Tecteon? It could be that Tecteon was trying to cover up, I think this is even mentioned by the Master, I think it's Tecteon trying to cover up the information that's on the discovery of the Doctor in the Matrix. The discovery of the Timeless Child in the Matrix. So she puts that filter over it. So it looks like the strange story of a strange child who's found in Ireland. And perhaps the other two don't age because she does that to leave a clue for the Doctor when she's viewing the information, perhaps. Because I think even the Master says, did she leave it there for you to find? Are these bits clues?
Those glitches of Ireland you keep seeing. Those images that were buried deep in the Matrix. Tecteon put a visual filter over it so that no one who watched it would find it remarkable. I transmitted them into your mind as you tracked the Cybermen. Maybe this is the last gift of a parent. A clue. Or an apology. You can decide. Did Tecteon leave these images for you to decode one day?
So I wonder if leaving the adoptive father and the policeman the same age was a clue that Tecteon was hoping the Doctor would find. Possibly.
Yeah.
So I hope that makes sense. Can I go back to what I was saying about the writing of the episode as well? There's that bit where they're on the spaceship, on the refugee spaceship, and they hear things hitting the hull. They're sort of looking at each other, all a bit worried and things, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, what is that? Is that like a Cyberman? That somehow in outer space has landed on their hull and is like climbing across it and trying to get in. And then they're standing there and they go, what is that thudding noise? And one of them says, who knows what's out there? And then Yaz goes, shall I have a look out the window? okay. What a good idea. Anyway, this just made me laugh. But another thing, one thing, has anyone ever played Dead Space?
No, I've seen it.
Can't remember if it was it Xbox or one of those anyway.
It rings a bell. It does ring a bell.
From my memory, looking at the back of Ashad reminded me a lot of playing Dead Space because he appears to have an almost identical back to the protagonist of Dead Space, which is basically a horror-based first-person shooter set on abandoned spaceships and space stations and the like. Oh, and what about the line, the Cyberman that makes other man... the man that makes other men scream. No, sorry. The Cyberman that makes other Cybermen scream. That's really corny as well, wasn't it? Do we know what he was doing now? I think he was just trying to wake them up, wasn't he? You know, when he's like going at them with a drill and stuff. And
that was weird. In a way, I thought he was testing them to see how strong they were and if they were ready to be hatched, as it were.
It's like sticking a fork in them.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. Sort of, yeah, making sure they're ready and tender, yeah.
Because the other ones, the other two wandered off and started doing it to other ones further down the line, didn't they?
Yes, they did, yeah.
So it's, I mean, if they had to do that to re-energise all of them, they'd have been there for years.
That is true. Yeah, did you get Earthshock vibes at all from their reawakening?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, quite joyously, actually. I enjoyed that bit. As soon as they realised that the cyber carrier was carrying soldiers and they're looking down that corridor and all the lights start coming on, they start seeing all the doors to the conversion chambers. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. I did think as well. I did think that with there was a moment when Graham is sort of saying to a Julie Graham's character about, oh, trust me, I'm a doc. And there were some people online who were saying, oh, Graham's the doctor. And
yes, I thought, yes.
Don't be stupid, for goodness sakes.
Yes, because it sounded almost like he was about to say, Strange, I'm the doctor. And everyone was like, he was going to say he's the doctor.
Yeah.
I thought, what? Surely not. There's quite a big movement for it, wasn't there?
Yeah,
there's a big group got behind it. I just thought, that's just bonkers, isn't it?
You are really strange.
Excuse me, I'm the most normal bloke you're ever going to meet.
No, strange is a compliment.
I think it was a very odd moment. I quite like that they split them up this time out as well. It doesn't feel like that's happened as much this season, as in when the Doctor's paired off with Ryan. You know, I don't feel like she's actually had much time with Ryan.
No.
On his own. You know, it's not something... She's either been with Graham or she's been with Yaz quite a lot.
Mm.
I was quite intrigued with what was going on more with Graham and Yaz. And the Earthlings then. The Earthlings. The Earthmen. But I was a little more bored by the Doctor until they got away. And then did you think that maybe they were setting up, I think it was Ethan, wasn't it? As maybe the, maybe like, I thought for a second when he said, oh, when I was a kid, I learned to hotwire things like this. This is easy.
Mm.
I thought, oh no, don't make this another incarnation of the Master. Yes, it was me all along. It would turn out to be a bit like Hugh Laurie's character in Blackadder 2, wouldn't it? Do you remember that stable boy? Yes, I was that goat. The master of disguise, you know. I thought, oh no, it's going to turn into... I've forgotten, what's the name of the character in that? Sorry, this is going to bug me.
Evil Prince Ludwig.
Evil Prince Ludwig, yes. I did think it they had shades of Evil Prince Ludwig about it. Do you want another piece of pie, my lord?
You do not remember me then, Herr Blackadder.
I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Oh, on the contrary. We have met many times. Although you knew me by another name. Do you recall a mysterious black marketeer and smuggler called Otto, with whom you used to dine and plot and play the biscuit game at the old Pizzle in Dover?
My God!
Yes! I was the waitress.
I don't believe it, you big Sally.
Will you have another piece of pie, my lord?
But I went to bed with you, didn't I?
Lord Melchett, we meet again.
No, I don't think we've had the pleasure.
You do not recognize me, then?
No.
Let me refresh your memory. You remember when you were in Cornwall at the monastery, there was an old shepherd with whom you used to talk.
Good lord. Jenkins?
Yes! I was one of his sheep.
Sheep?
Not...
Yes! Flossie?
Yes!
But didn't we...
Yes, Lord Met!
Yeah, so I was relieved when the Master popped out of the window of opportunity. Sorry, out of the wormhole on the planet. I did think the portal moment, it reminded me a bit of Rick and Morty.
I've never seen it, I'm afraid to say.
Transporting from one thing to another. I did think it was a bit Rick and Morty. That's what I'm saying. Listeners, you know what I'm on about. But I was quite happy when... I thought the cliffhanger was fairly good, actually. Probably the strongest part of the episode, I have to say.
Yeah, but having said that, I mean, it's good to see that after this series has championed ecology and recycling, that they've just borrowed the cliffhanger from episode one of Skyfall. Spyfall.
Yeah, I suppose so, but...
Basically, suddenly, ha-ha, I'm the Master. Doctor, everything you know is a lie.
Yeah.
Did you notice the mistake there?
What's that?
You know, he comes through and he says, ha-ha-ha, what an entrance.
Mm. Yes.
Which I thought, oh, Jesus, they're not going to start this again, are they?
Yeah.
And then the camera cuts the Doctor's face and moves back to the Master saying everything he knew was a lie. But he's saying it in a completely different tone.
Yes,
As if it's part of a different conversation. And I think this, I'll probably get onto this. Mm. I think that's an editing problem.
Yes, yeah.
I think they've cut something out there. Possibly a line of the Doctor's, possibly a line of someone else's.
Mm. Yeah. Or it's a different take altogether. Which it could be. It could be a different
possibly.
Take.
Possibly.
Yeah, maybe.
which just makes you wonder about the editing here.
Yeah, well, I think we've brought that up on previous episodes as well, haven't we, about the editing? I'm not sure the editing's done right. It quite often feels like bits are chopped out and just like, oh, it often feels clumsily done.
Wow! Oh! It's a good entrance, right? Be afraid, Doctor. Because everything is about to change.
I'm beginning to wonder if... Because I've been really harsh on Yaz and Ryan.
No. That was you.
Throughout the series, it's almost... Particularly Ryan. It seems as if he's getting... As if he's getting half sentences to say. And I don't know. It's because maybe they think, oh, he did that so badly, we've got to cut it. Or just they thought, oh, we've got to cut it for time so we can do something else. When you consider a lot of the bullshit that's in a lot of these episodes... You think, what the hell are they not cutting to give that?
No, it is true. It's true, yeah.
So again, the companions, I say, Christ. The absence of any real... You know, Yaz is telling Graham how wonderful he is, and then next time Graham tells Yaz how wonderful she is. Which I suppose it's nice. I suppose they have to tell each other that, because, you know, in the absence of actually having achieved anything. But this absence of any real achievement, or even character growth, doesn't stop this... laughable sense of entitlement we get from the companions. Yeah, we're here to help. We're used to coming up with plans to save the day, aren't we? No, you're not, Ryan. You've spent 2 years droning monotone half sentences asking what's happening, and you have the nerve to say something like, do you need help with that kid?
Hey, do you need help with that kid?
Who are you calling kid?
Oh, yeah, that was a... I thought that was a dreadful line, and dreadfully delivered.
Leave aside the fact that he delivers the line without punctuation. So what he actually says is, do you need help with that kid? You know, as if it's a jobbing babysitter or something.
Looking after a young goat.
What a twist.
Who the hell does Ryan imagine he is to address someone roughly his own age as kid? Even Graham wouldn't do that. I mean, Graham as being much older. This goes back to what Mark's saying about the language and the scripting.
Yeah.
Who uses words like kid these days? Possibly a long time ago, someone was being roguish. You know when Sydney says to Verity,
10 million viewers for your bug-eyed monsters. 10 million. So, what do I know about Anna? Well done, kid.
Now, you can imagine that, because it was... He's that sort of roguish figure, isn't he? But it's just almost seems as if they're trying to make Ryan deliberately. Do you remember what they used to say in that? Well, I didn't, but I used to suffer people saying in, we didn't say it at all because the podcast didn't exist then, but in series two, people kept saying, I think it's purposeful that Rose and the 10th Doctor are so bloody annoying and arrogant and smug because it's going to end up being their downfall. It almost seems as if they're trying to do that here with Ryan. And even Graham's doing it this time. What's he say? He tries it on with Yedlami.
Checks notes.
I mean, maybe Graham was just annoyed that Yedlami is almost I'm Bradley backwards.
Oh, God, it is as well, yeah.
He says three things to Yedlami.
Oh, dear.
A guy who has just had his brother murdered in front of him.
We're still alive. Give it time. I wish you was a bit more glass off, full sunshine. Any idea where we are?
Middle of space. Dying slowly.
Yes, thank you, Eeyore. I've got that much.
So we find the best habitable planet?
Yeah, that could work. Oh, careful, son. You sounded slightly positive there for a sec.
The bloody guy just lost his brother. I mean... This kind of thing to me seems a bit like, you know, this thing where some people sometimes do it online. You write the first chapter of a story and then you pass it on to someone else to write the next chapter and so on. But here, each writer isn't allowed to read the previous chapter. This whole era of Chris Chibnall seems to me to be characterised by, no, people don't behave like that. People don't speak like that. There's a line of Ethan, I don't know which one he is.
So this is all you ever know?
The war made us pariahs because of what was always coming for us. The last Cybermen. intent on destroying the last humans.
People don't say that. Yeah. People actually don't use intent like that in conversation. And of course, well, the Doctor doesn't do that, but she does, she is talking to herself again.
It's warp, of course. Which makes it trickier, unless you may, which I am, which is good. Because I used to hop wild warp drives for fun on a weekend as a teenager. Not that we had weekends, or teenagers. Basically, I used to do this a lot and people got mad. And now it's going to save all our lives. So who was right all along and is now the real winner?
There's a faster way.
Crying out, I'll just get on with it.
Yeah, can I just say, well, there's that bit early on in the episode where she says she's told everyone else to get undercover and she actually says out loud, act as bait to herself. And it's like the writing doesn't have any...
Act as bait?
Act as bait.
Oh, right. I thought it was like code or something. Act as bait.
Actually, it can't be that. There aren't any actors on this screen.
She says... Act as bait to herself.
All humans will be duly turned up.
Rethink. Keep the other safe. Act as bait. See ya!
And it's like whoever's, well, in this instance, Cripps Chibnall, it's like he doesn't have any confidence in the audience out that the reason she's told them to get into cover while she runs around is because she's trying to lure the Cybermen around. We don't need to be told.
No, but this is what I said last week, isn't it? It's endemic of television now. There isn't show, don't tell. It's tell and show everything now because people are absolutely scared that criticism's going to be, well, we don't understand Doctor Who. Well, I've got to spell it out to make it more universal for everyone then. Which is, of course, the wrong thing to do. You've just got to be very sharp with your dialogue and what you are doing with the plot to make sure people understand. We were going back to, I remember Doc saying this, and actually this will go in well to our next episode, when you talk about the Eccleston Doctor wanting to see the power of Captain Jack's gun in The Empty Child.
Hello?
Oh, I just realised what I said. And he says, oh, what's wrong with this Sonic? He says, nothing. And then you work out, later on in that scene, he's trying to work out the power of said Sonic gun to see if it can get them out of danger. Well, now you would have the Doctor saying, you see, what we need is that gun. We need that gun because then we can see if we can fire a hole through the ground and then we can fall through it and back into safety. You know, and it's just, I don't know why I was acting Jodie Whittaker as Keith Chegwin.
That was uncanny.
But anyway.
Aidan, two podcasts ago, I deliberately, out of politeness, refrained from criticising your Northern accents. Christopher Eccleston is not Scouse.
No, that was supposed to be Whittaker. That makes all the difference, doesn't it?
She's even less Scouse.
God, thank God Alan's not on here still, otherwise he'd be berating me now, wouldn't he?
But no, Arshad was out and away the best thing in it for me. He's effortlessly. And when you consider half his face is covered as an actor, it just blows everyone off the screen. Shall we... because we know we want to. Shall we give marks out of 10 to Ascension so we can really get in our teeth into children?
What? Sorry?
Rephrase that.
Hang on a minute. I must be on the wrong podcast. I'll be back in a bit. So what, we're giving this a rating now? Or are we going straight on to...
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. I'd say 6 for Ascension.
Okay.
We're going to give an overall score, aren't we, at the end for the two-parter, yeah?
We will, but I won't be counting you.
Okay, all right, 6. I'll say 6 for this then.
I'm going to try and rate these episodes in the context of what I've given other episodes of this series.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, I did like this more than Praxeus and Orphan 55, but not as much as most of the others. So I think I'm just going to go with I'm going to give it a 7.
Right.
He's done it again, Mark. It's that sigh.
Well, if I scored it at all, the only thing I'd be scoring it for positively would be Brendan and Arshad. I'm going to give it... that was a 5.
Ooh.
It wasn't nearly as bad as Orphan 55, which I gave a 4 to. I'll give it a 5. Oh, should I give it a 5? Should I? What else did I give it? I mean, it's... That means I give it less than Praxis.
See, I don't remember what I gave everything, so I can't really give...
Well, I can tell you.
Can you? Because I might have to re...
Right, Spy 1, you gave 9. Spy 2, you gave 8. Orphan, you gave 5.
Flattering, yep.
Tesla, you gave 9.
I've just looked on Rotten Tomatoes, so I wanted to see what people have made of this series. Yeah. And it made me... Well, no. I was looking back at the previous finales, and I saw that The Doctor Falls and World Enough and Time is the only two-parter finale which has got 100% rating across both episodes.
That's understandable, I suppose.
Okay. Oh, yes, have a look. Okay, right, so H. God, you know what? I've been generous, very... I don't think... Well, I hope I look back in a year or two and think to myself...
I can't believe I'm as high as 58.
I want to look back in a year or two and think these scores will stay the same, actually.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want them to go down. But yeah, actually, yeah, okay. Yeah, I go with that. Yeah, I didn't enjoy Ascension as much as I did.
Hayden, if you think you're getting us to watch this series again, you're mistaken.
Can you imagine if we pull Jodie Whittaker out the hat next time out? Oh, dear.
I'm giving it a 5. Because the Brendan thing and the Arshad thing weren't big enough on their own to raise it, but they were... The Brendan thing was truly interesting enough to, and the performance by Patrick O'Kane, is it? Mm. As Arshad was just so out of the park that... do I mean out of the park? Off the scale, that I think it justifies it. So I'll give it a 5. Should I give it a 6? No, I'll give it a 5. That bad?
I think there's other ones you've spoken about which you've given higher scores to but hated more.
Can I change my score, actually? I think I'll give it a 6, which I think puts it with alongside my rating for Orphan 55, probably,
which I've renamed Awful 55, but there you go.
I probably enjoyed Orphan 55 more than I ought to have done.
Yeah.
Right. The Children of Time. Let's just sum up the plot, shall we? The Shapogans are the original Gallifreyans who discovered regeneration by stealing it from a hidden previous incarnation of the Doctor, and this annoyed the Master so much that he destroyed Gallifrey and turned all the dead Time Lords into Cybermen. Discuss. Or, as I saw someone on Gallifrey Base sum it up more succinctly, the timeless child is what the Rise of Skywalker would have looked like on a BBC budget. So, by the way, Mark, were you saying something strange happened to you the night you were watching this?
Yeah, that's right. I was sat at home the other night watching telly with Dolly, you know, the wife.
Oh, yeah, the wife, yeah.
When suddenly I heard this tap, tap, tap on the bleeding front door. Which surprised me, because it was Doctor Who's big end of season finale episode that was on. I thought, funny.
Oh, funny, yeah. Funny, yeah.
Funny.
Very funny, yeah.
Yeah, surely everyone's at home watching this exciting denouement to the end of the season.
Yeah, you'd have thought, yeah.
Anyway, I answered the door, and you'll never guess who it was.
Who was it?
It was Chris Bleeding Chibnall.
Oh.
Christ, I thought. He said, I've come round to do a bit of decorating. I said, you what? Now? Me and a wife just watching, you know, our favourite telly programme.
Yeah.
Don't worry, he said. There's a long bit coming up where nothing really happens, so you won't miss anything.
Oh, that's so good. You know, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
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 Well, he would know.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
You know, he wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, anyway, so I let him in. Do you know what he did?
No, what'd he do? What'd he do?
He marched straight into my living room, unbuckled his belt, undid his flies, dropped his trousers and his undies, and he proceeded to curl out one of the biggest, stinkiest turds I've ever had the misfortune of seeing in my lifetime.
Oh, God. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, that is really... Do you know, don't expect him to decorate all over the floor, do you? That's really bad. Yeah.
Well, no. No, you don't. You don't, H. No. No. Well, I wasn't having it. Chibnall, I said. You know, I wanted to keep it formal.
Yeah.
Chibnall, I said, you have tested me in the past, but this time you have really taken the biscuit. I was quite angry.
You're angry. Yeah.
Anyway, he goes, don't worry. And he gets out this big bleeding pot of red paint and a great big massive bleeding paintbrush.
I expect it was the one he uses for delicate exposition and to illustrate the finer points of his characters.
Yeah, I expect you're right, H. I expect you're right. Yeah. Anyway, and he proceeded to paint this huge bleeding turd bright red.
Oh, no.
I said, hold on, Chibnall, what's your game here then? And he turns to me and he says, well, I've painted it red and now it matches your settee, thus solving all problems. I thought, well...
Oh, fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that is fair enough. Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah. Doctor Who was sh*t, though.
Well, you know, some things just... They just tell you everything you need to know about a man, don't they? You have red settees.
It's plural.
Right. Wants to start on this. Are you positive about this, Hayden, or negative?
I think Hayden's fairly positive, isn't he, by the sound of it?
Fairly. If you'd just like to lay back on the chaise lounge, tell me what you found disturbing about this story, you two.
Fire away, Mark.
Yeah, the day after I watched the episode go out live, I was just going about my business throughout the day, and I kept having these moments of sadness, genuine sadness and irritation. And it's like those times when perhaps you've received a bill in the post and you put it down on the side, forgotten about it. Later on, something's nagging at your mind and you think, oh God, it's that bloody bill, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was a bit like that with this. I kept thinking, something nagging at me at the back of my mind. And I kept thinking, oh, it's last night's Doctor Who. And I think what did it for me, I mean, I'm not going to be one of these melodramatic people who's saying that, it's ruined my childhood, this change of Time Lord lore or whatever, or that this new revelation. It hasn't done that, but to find out that the Doctor is no longer, I always enjoyed the fact that it was Hartnell's Doctor who got fed up on Gallifrey, got fed up and disillusioned with the Time Lords, stole a TARDIS and ran away. And then learnt to become a hero. And there was nothing... Well, obviously, he's a Time Lord, so there's that special about him. But beyond that, he wasn't a special Time Lord. In fact, I think he'd done quite badly at some of his exams, hadn't he? So he was just an ordinary Time Lord who'd become this hero. And for me to find out that actually the Doctor is the progenitor of all the Time Lord abilities... That every Time Lord has got some of her DNA in her. And that without her, the Time Lords wouldn't exist. Just puts such an onus on her and makes her so different and unique that I actually find it a little bit sad for me. I know people are saying, oh, but you could still say that's only the Doctor. And that because, I mean, Jodie Whittaker says, doesn't she, that she remembers growing up.
Yeah.
But we learned that it wasn't her first life, so all that still happened. But it's the fact that you can't get away from the fact that she's the entire Time Lord race has been spawned from her genetic code. And it's just, I don't know, it just makes her too magical for my tastes. And I miss the simplicity of it. I know also people say, a lot of people say that, you know, changing lore and revelations in lore, Time Lord lore, that is, L-O-R-E, and even rewriting continuity like Genesis of the Daleks. That's all been done before. But just because you don't like this change doesn't mean that you can't still like the 10th Planet, War Games, Genesis of the Daleks and Deadly Assassin. It doesn't mean you can't still like those stories for what they are.
Well, Genesis of the Daleks only really changes lore if you're being ultra fiddly about time, really. The Daleks back in 63 could easily have come centuries after Genesis if you're prepared to ignore a few things.
Yeah, which being a Doctor Who fan, we are generally conditioned to ignore a few things.
Even if it had changed things, in return, we got, I know some revisionists these days will say otherwise, in Genesis we got an amazing story. It's vastly exaggerated how much the Deadly Assassin changed the Time Lord lore. You'll get people going around saying, they turned them into dodgy old men. No, they didn't. That's based entirely on that 1-2 minute scene in a changing room.
Yeah.
Well, where's my gown? The rest of it, the Time Lords are actually powerful, intelligent, and proactive characters. And Deadly Assassin is one of the great stories, I think.
Mm.
But as I was saying when we were talking about essentially the Cybermen, if you're going to change the law, at least make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
At least do it in the course of telling us a brilliant story.
I mean, a lot of people have mentioned, if you like Deadly Assassin, then you don't care about Robert Holmes dropping in about that the Time Lords are limited to 12 regenerations. But that's something Robert Holmes had to put in to serve the story.
Yeah.
It wasn't the point of the story. Deadly Assassin wasn't written because Robert Holmes decided he wanted the Time Lords to have 12 generations. You know, he's trying to tell a story, and he had to use the 12 generations to...
to explain why the Master was dying.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I think it was a good bit of world building.
Mm.
It's just a throwaway line. But I wonder, I think the problem is, I think I've said before, that I guess this is the Morbius faces. But I can handle almost simultaneously two ideas at the same time in my head, that Time Lords are limited to 12 regenerations, and that was a line put in by a guy who was just writing the story for a reason. Now, that means that he could have made a mistake. The extra faces in Morbius could have been just someone going a bit over the top. I don't really care that much, as long as it's interesting.
Mm.
I've always just said to myself, oh, well, maybe it was they were Morbius' previous faces. Because the only reason we've got for thinking that the Doctor was losing the battle at that point was the fact that Morbius is going around boasting and the Doctor's sweating. Well, Morbius is... we all already know that Morbius is a loony. There could have been his previous faces. That's easy to work out that.
It's a loose end that has been ignored, and already people have already got their own headcanons about it. It wasn't a nagging thing that people are... same with the half-human on my mother's side. You know, I think everyone's come to terms with that now, and we've moved on. It's not like, oh, I must go back and solve this problem.
But I felt the same way. I don't know about Hayden, but I think Hayden feels differently about this story. But tough Hayden, we've got the conch at the moment. I felt the same as you. I felt quite... it just left me feeling very downcast. For me, I'll come out with it now. Timeless Children was on a par with something like Time Flight. I just didn't see any redeeming qualities in it. So when, the reason I was downcast was, it was partly, they've changed all this lore, but I've got nothing in return. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy for them to change. I don't really particularly care about all that. I mean, I found it slightly annoying about the War Doctor. I mean, being a Doctor Who fan, obviously I alphabetize so that everything I can get my hands on. And so so strictly the 10th Doctor is the 11th Doctor. That's awkward. But you get over it, don't you? You just realise that, it's something different. And a little bit of pain to our perfectionist nature as fans. But in exchange, we got a damn good story. But we didn't with this, I felt. And... I think we know that Season 12 has been a struggle for me, as has Series 11. I cannot remember when I last sat down with anticipation to watch an episode of Doctor Who. I really can't. And I'm starting to have doubts now that... and again, this isn't me saying... this isn't me saying, oh, it's ruined, it's stolen from me. I just seriously think, is it still for me, Doctor Who? But more in the sense of... I'd just outgrown it in a sort of way. Not, oh, how disgraceful they've taken it from me. I mean, we were chatting earlier in the series, weren't we? And I can't remember if we did it on air or whether it was behind the scenes, that should we really be reviewing this series as it goes along?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should just, give it a few months or something and then do it later.
We said that before, didn't we? I think it was during Series 9, I think we said that, going back a bit.
I think that was more a logistics thing, wasn't it? Rather than, I think we were getting a little depressed, weren't we, for the earlier this year that, oh God, we constantly seem to be coming in and downhearted at this.
I think though that we've been fairly positive this series. I mean, I think I have been on the whole. As me and Hayden said earlier, we both think this is a vast improvement on the last series. And you say about sitting down to watch an episode with anticipation, but I would say that Praxeus probably suffered for me, because after Fugitive of the Jadoon, which I adored, I then sat down for the next episode with huge anticipation, and it just went off into that. And I think my view of Praxeus probably suffered from it.
They screwed around with the cannon, and in return we got nothing. And my attitude is, if you're going to get the clap, make sure it's from a night of great sex, and not from some fumble with a slapper behind the chippy and a puddle of piss. And I'm not just saying this to try and get out of being accused of being over-nerdish. I generally don't really mind that much about the change in the canon stuff. I think, end of the day, to me, The Timeless Children was just bad television. What Hayden was saying early tonight, it seems an exaggeration, isn't it, to say, oh, I found this episode painful to watch. It's usually just an expression. But I was literally finding it painful to watch. You know, if you've got an itch or a rash that makes you uncomfortable. I felt like that watching The Timeless Children. Uncomfortable and restless. And if I'd still wore a watch, I'd have been constantly checking my watch. Because I was thinking, oh, God, how much longer is this going to go on? When are they going to stop the interminable dialogue and let something happen?
Well, that's one of the problems I saw. So I'm not completely going to be singing his praises.
Bad television for me. The acting was as dire as it has been in Chibnall's era. The writing was as bad as it's been. The sense of dramatic and emotional power was non-existent. It was, for me, it was just mediocre rubbish for me. You've read the Harry Potter books, haven't you, Hayden?
The first four, yeah.
You haven't, have you, Mark? Well, no, Mark, you just twiddle your thumbs for this bit. Some people say what J.K. Rowling needs is, everyone's heard this, needs is a better editor who would have cut her books down to a shorter length.
Oh, God, yeah.
But what's really unbalanced about those books is the climactic confrontational scene in every book where Harry confronts, I don't know, Voldemort or whoever the baddie is in that book in the final weeks of the school year. And almost every time the same thing happens. The action stops, and for two chapters, the villain delays killing Harry until he's explained to him at great length what he's been up to since the beginning of the school year. I don't know if you've ever heard any of the Harry Potter audiobooks by Stephen Fry. They're very good, but they always become painful at this point because the voice that Stephen Fry chooses for Voldemort goes a bit like this. Let's think. Oh, before I kill you, Harry. Oh, yes, I am going to kill you. If you are certain... I'm just making this up, by the way. In the style of, if you are certain of nothing else, be certain of that. After all, you have frustrated my design so often that you must be killed. But before I kill you, let me explain the genius of my... And you say, oh, get on with it! Blah, Christ's sake!
Do you know who read the books in America?
Oh, Jim Dale.
Jim Dale, yeah.
Oh!
What a legend.
And that's what The Timeless Child's like for me. Reams of bloody exposition put across in, and what made it worse, an irritating choice of delivery by Sacha Doan. What does the Doctor say to the Master in Deadly Assassin? You delay an execution to pull the wings off a fly. It's that sort of thing. In Spyfall, I thought, he seems too giddy and too delighted with his giddiness, a bit like John Sim. And I was relieved in Spyfall Part 2 when he played it much more seriously.
Mm.
Now he's gone right back to the, oh, I'm right mad I am character, and he kept it up to the end. And I've seen people, by the way, we didn't mention, listeners, that this week we've temporarily suspended, I've had a moratorium on our principle that we don't talk about what other people say about the show. Because really, we feel like just getting it out this time. I've seen people hail it as a powerful performance and the best Master ever. And you think, oh, bloody hell, have they not seen Roger Delgado? He's not just giddy, he's bombastic too.
Mm.
He's playing it as sort of part John Sim, part Eric Roberts, I always dress for the occasion. It's all hyped up dialogue, apparently designed for, you know, whoever finds that sort of thing impressive. And the Doctor just stands there and gets talked to endlessly and talked to about the most fan-babble nonsense interspersed with this bombast. It's whole screeds of exposition. I mean, why not have the Doctor inside the Matrix gradually discovering that these secrets for herself? At least that would have been dramatic and given her some agency. As it is, the only agency the Doctor gets in this episode, so she pushes the Master over. She even lets the old man sacrifice his life instead of her. And again, she's given so little to say that it's a bloody waste when she's doing it to give her... Well, she's talking to herself again. No, shut up, I need to concentrate. And she's talking to herself. Oh, it was just getting me down completely. I need a rest from my moaning now. Someone jump in.
Okay, I mean, there was an exchange earlier on Twitter which I thought a rather apt meme up with regards to this, and that's the meme of Moses parting the Red Sea, and I just followed it up with the
oh, yes.
with the word fandom. I hate to turn into Mark Kermode here, but I'm sort of sitting here with my arms crossed about sort of speak about this, but I wanted to sort of talk about fandom in general since the start of the series, because the thing I loved when I was a kid and in my teens and actually in my early 20s, probably only until a few years ago, is that I could have an opinion on something and it wasn't necessarily altered or shaped around an opinion of someone else. So that I might have liked a song or an album that, let's say, the consensus is that that's not a very good show or album. You know, some people may class it as a guilty pleasure if they're into something like Made in Chelsea, or if they think Be Here Now is the best Oasis album, for example, which I categorically don't. But anyway, that's I just wanted to say that just to retain my own sanity. The thing I would say, though, is that I think, unfortunately, this iteration of Doctor Who, this era, is doing its best. And it's doing its best in a climate where there's very little grey in between the black and white. People either love it, people either hate it. People either strongly agree or people either strongly disagree. You know, when you're doing like corporate questionnaires, so after you've done a training program, you go, how would you rate the service you had today? As like, oh, would you recommend it? Oh, likely, very likely. Forget all of that. Throw that out the window. The world nowadays seems to be in two camps. I either loved it or I hated it. Nothing highlights that more than something which I think is a brilliant tool for communication in Twitter. It's an absolute cesspool of toxicity, and it seems to be that on a number of sort of subjects, anything, it could be coronavirus, it could be Brexit, it could be, you know, storms, it could be whatever. It is an utter higgledy-piggledy mess of people who don't think before they write. You know, that 5-10 seconds, I've said this before on previous podcasts, but that 5-10 seconds that a person has in a conversation to think of what they're going to say to the next person is precious when it comes to communication. And I just think that that is being completely lost through social media. And what it's being replaced by is people who are either strongly for, strongly against, strongly believe in, or strongly disagree. You know, it's going into two different camps. I think this Doctor Who is unfortunate that it's being shown in an era where this is completely prevalent, where social media rules the roost. Social media rules the world. Everyone has an opinion, everyone expresses that opinion, and it can snowball, it can get very toxic. I didn't think this was perfect, but I was more entertained than I was by Ascension of the Cybermen. There's elements of it I liked, there's elements of it I hated. I did like Sacha Dhawan's performance, although I do think he is playing more of a dark take of Matt Smith's Doctor, and even dressed in him a little bit as well. Which I found interesting.
Yeah, it certainly does.
I'm not too bothered with the going back and the retreading of canon, because like I said, I think every showrunner's done this. They want to stamp their mark and put their authority on the series. The only trouble I find with it this time out is I don't think Chris Chibnall, and who am I to give this piece of constructive criticism? I don't think Chris Chibnall is a good enough science fiction writer to give it full conviction and full justice. I think if you did have, and this isn't his fault, he has taken over the reins of a program which is, well, when he took it over, 13, 14 years old. That is a great run, and that's over half the run of the original series, of the classic series, sorry, right? He's taken it over after you've had two very good, almost bordering on genius head writers and showrunners in Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat.
That's true.
He is on a hiding to nothing. He has taken over the show during a period where we have a very woke culture where everyone, obviously Moffat sowed the seeds for a female doctor. Moffat sowed the seeds. He took it on and he built up on it. And I said at the time, as long as casting works, and I don't mind anymore. I didn't feel good towards it leading up to the Capaldi casting. But when it came to Jodie Whittaker, I thought, okay, well, let's see how it goes. I think it has worked in a way, but I just don't think Chris Chibnall is a strong enough science fiction writer to give this arc its full justice. I think it's an interesting concept, and I think it's one that does explain away the Morbius Doctors and the Joe Martin Doctor, but then herein lies the trouble, and this is what I was alluding to earlier. When you keep overwriting the lore of a TV show which is getting on for 60 years old, inconsistencies are going to continually come up. And it's really difficult to place this Joe Martin Doctor. Where does she come? Because if she's pre-Hartnell, which she must be, why does she say the line of, oh, of course, I'd never hurt anyone in Fugitive of the Jadoon? Because Hartnell is very, you know, he wants to bludgeon the caveman to death in the Cave of Skulls.
Yeah, and why does she have a police box TARDIS?
Well, the only thing I can think, and again, headcanon, but the only thing I can think about for that is that that person who was after her in Fugitive is clearly part of the division, because it's the same headdress as the person who was sitting on the desk with Tecton, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something that I'll build on next series, which again lends to Doc's argument of maybe we should review these maybe a couple of years down the line, you know, because then we've got more time to breathe. Because we look at stuff like The Brain of Morbius, which is 44 years old and has had 4 decades to sink into our brains, you know, and for us to maybe be a bit more forgiving towards that because we were younger when we saw it and because it's had decades to ferment in our minds.
But I wonder if Dave, the reason she got a police box TARDIS is if the Doctor had dug out a coffin-shaped TARDIS out of that grave, none of us would have had that shot.
No, exactly. No, narratively, I can see the, what they call the Doylist reason for it, but not the Watsonian.
Oh, Al once explained this to me at great length, and I've still not remembered it.
The only thing I can think of with the Joe Martin Doctor is that this isn't the first has to be the first incarnation of the Doctor, but maybe with her being a fugitive, there was a complete hard reset, because they do say in the dialogue that they limited 13 regenerations, don't they? So maybe the punishment of this Doctor is basically to completely reset, almost in the way of, I'm not suggesting that she turned into an egg, but a bit like Annette Padlan's Slitheen, you know, completely new start, start off again as a child, wipe the memories. But I have a problem.
Do you remember back in...
Go on. Oh, I was just going to say, I have a slight problem with them releasing merchandise and posters where they're including the Joe Martin Doctor in this now with the others. Please, for God's sakes, will you explain to me, Chris Chibnall, where she goes? I don't think they should leave this as a mystery. It's a real annoyance of mine.
Unless it's intentionally a mystery. Is it that he's not thought himself yet, or does he know and we're going to find out?
Well, this is the thing. We're not going to know. We're not going to be able to judge this story properly for, like, as you say, another couple of years.
Yeah.
To be fair, are we?
Yeah.
But we have to do the review.
But going back to my original point, fandom is so poisonous. It's so poisonous.
Mm.
I've got a writing group at work, and we all meet up and we talk about the projects that we're currently working on. And we were speaking about this, and all of us pretty much said, yeah, there's bits of it I liked, but there's bits of it that confused me and maybe I need to let it settle and go back to it and watch it again. Brilliant. Mm. Absolutely fine. Problem with Twitter and Facebook is that you can have people going, that's the greatest episode I've ever seen. Oh my God, how brave. That's amazing. Well, yeah, okay, fair enough. That's your opinion. Fantastic. But then you've got other people saying, that's the complete death of Doctor Who. And then you've got people saying, no, William Hartnell's the original Doctor Who. He is the first. There is nobody else. And you just think, but there isn't. I'm sorry. That's been taken out of your hands. It's now canon that I'm afraid you're just going to have to like it and lump it. I'm not sure. Do I like it? I think I just want this Joe Martin Doctor explaining to me.
Mm. I was going to say, a lot of the people, a lot of the stuff that I've seen, seems to be a lot of people saying, I mean, this is people I kind of respect and like on Twitter as well. It's not like people that I'm...
I thought there was only two of us.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel a bit put out now.
No, I like you. I don't know about the other one. But a lot of people have said what a genius bit of writing it is by Chris Chibnall to suddenly open up the world of Doctor Who. And now people say, wow, that's amazing. There can be an infinite number of Doctors. And I thought that's exactly not the sort of baggage I want. Right. Is to think that, no. Oh, there could be thousands of the Doctor could have had thousands of incarnations. Anyone could have been a Doctor. I don't want it like that. I like my things quite... I'm a bit boring, I suppose, perhaps.
In fact, it's almost starting now, isn't it? Already, isn't it? You know, there's this thing people used to say. Any mysterious woman appears in the show, everyone will say, oh, is it the Rani?
Yes.
I think people are going to now say, oh, is it the previous Doctor?
Mm. Yes. Mm.
And they're going to start feeding that, and eventually it's going to become, well, the idea that John Hurt, a Doctor we didn't previously know about, I think they could quite easily kill the goose that lays the golden eggs and start doing it too often, and it's not going to be interesting anymore.
It's basically feeding the goose too much and turning it into foie gras, so it's a bloated beast.
Yes, exactly. There's one advantage to this episode, and I think it shows... And I think even though, I mean, I'm hitting this fairly hard, thing, but I don't think it would be even rational to suggest that any of us are being hateful.
No, yeah. We're not. No, no, no.
Or hating about this. Just something I really disliked. I mean, we have our own lives. We've got far more important things than Doctor Who concerning us. But I think one advantage is that I think it shows us what Chris Chibnall's issue may be. Or certainly, I think he's writing fan fiction.
Hmm. Oh, I quite agree. I think this would be fine in a New Adventures or a,
exactly.
Or a Missing Doctor.
Yeah, Missing Doctor. That's very apt.
And you know, I was thinking earlier today, the sort of fan fiction jumped up by teenagers. And I saw somewhere after I'd written that Chris Chibnall has said that he's been wanting to write this story since the 1980s.
Mm. Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, we actually know what Chris Chibnall was like in the 1980s, don't we? So, but the problem is that sort of age where you think the more impressive something sounds, the more, you know, over the top something is, the more impressive it actually is. I used to keep a diary in my teens, and it is toe-curlingly embarrassing to read it back sometimes today to see what a pompous windbag I used to be. Thank goodness I grew out of that. You listen to some of the Master's pretentious language. The Citadel, the heart of Gallifrey, land your ship in the ruins of Gallifrey, the first regeneration of any person in the planet Gallifrey. It's all. Behold your new Cybermaster. Who says behold? Remember the end of season 2, when Russell T. Davis was telling us who hasn't fantasised about a battle between the Daleks and Cybermen?
Mm.
Well, I never did for one when I was a kid. I didn't used to think about that sort of thing. I wonder if Chris, in his spotty youth, don't forget this is a time when you were so lacking in self-awareness you went on national TV in 80s fashion to slag off a writer's work to her face. I think, I mean, alone in the silent watches of the night, was he, in the same way that Russell was fantasising about the Daleks fighting the Cybermen, was Chris fantasising about Cybermen in Time Lord robes?
Mm.
I bet it's some, you know, small, in what perhaps was once a predecessor of the Fitzroy Tavern? Some small corner of a pub reeking of cheap aftershave. He possibly seen some of his friends. Wouldn't it look amazing to have Cybermen in Time Lord robes? And I suppose the people who dressed the way people did in the 80s didn't have much grasp of what looked good. But, and this is where I come back to what I was saying earlier, keep returning to this. What if you just said that we were, I don't think we realised, however much we might have bitched about them, what writing almost geniuses we had in Russell and Stephen. Was it you, Hayden, or was it you, Mark?
No, it's Hayden. But I do tend to agree. I mean, even then, they made glorious mistakes.
Mm.
At least, yes. At least Russell had a good enough sense of what constitutes drama, and maybe science fiction drama, to make his fan dream dramatic. He didn't just have them standing around and expecting us to think they were amazing because the Master said so. And I strongly suspect that this whole shambolic farrago had no other purpose. I seriously mean this. Had no other purpose than a fan's 40-odd year need to provide an answer to the question of those unexplained Morbius faces. I seriously think that. I think this is what's triggered the whole of this. He wanted to be the one that explained that. Either so he could go down in history as the one who fixed it, or because he's one of those sort of fans who thought it was so obsessive. I wouldn't put it past him. In fact, I can just hear the Series 13 trailer now. Dun-dun-dun. For thousands of years, I was trapped, holding down that cushion on Sutek's throne. Then, when he finally stood up, I thought my torment was over, but the doctor disappeared in his TARDIS and left me buried in that tomb. Now I intend to wreak my revenge by stealing all the cushions on Gallifrey. I mean, that is, I guess, something silly, but that is not that dissimilar, I think, from this whole Morbius thing. Shambolic farrago. Do you think that out there, somewhere among our listeners, one of them is writing Whosium fanfiction?
God.
The original inhabitants of Shambolic Farrago. In the original inhabitants of the Whosium were a race called the Shambolics, and their first podcaster was called Farrago. What were we talking about when Tony was here? Sir Jasper Gribble, the 10th Baronet. You think there's a 2020 Chris Chibnall out there typing away, one-handed, who's already come up with all the names for all the previous 9 holders of the title? Oh, hang on, boys, hang on. Hello, Diddly Dum Museum. Oh, Mr. Hay Gallery, hello. You want to do what? A new series of Big Finish audio adventures following the Gribble Baronets. What do you think? Watch us extract our revenge, listeners. Mr. Hager, didn't you many years ago reject a script proposal by former Diddly Dum host The Rev? Yes, you did, didn't you? So, no, you can't do that series. What was I talking about? Oh, so, I think it's fan fiction. But your teens, as I said about my reading back my awful diary entries, it's also the sort of age where you have no feeling for subtlety of the way things sound. And fans at that age think the target of their obsessions is intrinsically amazing. Why else could he think that calling the indigenous Gallifreyans Shabogans is so meaningful that it outweighs the fact it's just a silly name? It must be obvious that Bob Holmes intended it to sound a bit like hooligans. Because the first time we hear it, they're being referred to as vandals and people who graffiti the walls in the capital. And then, like you were saying about fan fiction in the wilderness years, they get elevated to something far more significant because so few of those writers actually came up with new ideas. It was all taking existing backstory and elevating it too high. But there we are. Anyone else want to jump in and take over from me?
I just want to mention some bits that I thought worked. I quite liked that Yaz was the one who tried to stop the Doctor from going out, you know, to basically set the bomb off. I think they really are starting to maybe set her up as maybe the main companion next year.
Well, we've heard that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think that's looking more and more likely.
And it's going to be her and Jack, I think?
Yeah, it could be.
Oh, well, I missed Graham there, because I think Bradley Walsh, I think his delivery, everything seems very easy and natural when he delivers a line, and believable. It just always seems to land right, even when he's given, you know, a duff script. Yeah. I think there's just something very, just something very natural about him.
If he's going, it would also suggest they've got to sort out his cancer issue in that whole Christmas special that's coming up, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed her turn this time out. I thought Jodie was all right. Again, exposition was far too much. Just had backstory explained to you for about 50 minutes of the programme. I didn't like the way that Ashad was dispatched by the Master. I thought the Master and the Cybermen teaming up again is something we've seen far too frequently in the history of Doctor Who. I think this is the 4th or 5th time that we've seen the Master and the Cybermen together.
Yeah.
It's the 3rd time in the last 4 years, I think.
3rd time in the last 5, yeah.
Oh, is it last 5? And they always seem to have... it's always the Master seems to end up in control of a cyber army.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
There was the whole cyber brigadier, wasn't there? Then there was the Mondasian Cybermen in World Enough in Time, and then there's this.
Yeah, so I think that's a bit of a mistake. I quite liked when the Joe Martin Doctor did turn up, but then, and obviously the fan wanky moment of all the previous Doctors, that little split seconds of them coming up when she's trying to escape the Matrix.
Oh, yes, when she says, have a blast of this, Matrix. Mm. And whereas, in fact, what's reading that, all I heard was, have a blast of this, nerds.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I enjoyed it more than I did Ascension. But again, I think it's, like we said, it's one we're going to have to come back to in a few years, I think, really. It's yeah. difficult to... I think at the moment, I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10. Yeah, I can't really say any more than that. But I just think the social media side of things has been incredibly unsettling for me reading it this year.
I keep telling you, you need to be more selective about who you follow.
Yeah, I saw one of the Time Team, the DWM Time Team. It started off a thread about Ascension.
Yeah.
And he was just putting up some very reasonable criticism of it. Then another member of Time Team came in and said, well, I disagree with that because I think this. Yeah. And then he said, he made another reasonable argument back. And then a third member of Time Team suddenly came in and started pretty much shouting at him over Twitter, saying, will you stop it with your toxic negativity and your passive aggression? I was like, what? I just thought that's really unfair on that guy. He even started the thread. It wasn't him. He hadn't pounced on somebody else.
Yeah.
And yet somebody came piling in, and like one of his friends, and attacking him. It was, yeah, bizarre. I didn't expect to see Time Team on Time Team Casualties.
Time Team on Time Team Action.
Yeah. God, so one thing about this that I worried about...
Go for it.
...with this episode was the fact that, as we've all identified, there's a lot of fan babble in it. And I did worry that this would alienate some of the more casual viewers. But I have to say, all the casual viewers I've spoken to seem to have enjoyed the episode, which is something. And I think it's... Which is the bizarre thing about... So all the references, the reference-heavy stuff, the callbacks to ancient stories, haven't actually got in the way of other people's enjoyment, which I think's quite a good thing.
I wouldn't expect it to, though. What slightly disappoints me is that these casual viewers just don't notice that it's shoddy television.
No, indeed.
Badly written, badly acted. I wouldn't think they'd care to what all the history of Gallifrey was. Was it Dan?
No, it wasn't. No, my friend Dan and his son Elliot didn't enjoy it at all, actually. Well, they did enjoy it a little bit, but Elliot found it incredibly disappointing. He felt it was... He's only, 10 years old, and he was saying he felt that there was too much crammed into it, ideas-wise, that they didn't actually satisfactorily cover. And he thought the idea that the Doctor was the progenitor of the Time Lord ability to regenerate was rubbish. So, very wise, our timeless child. Very
wise. What you need to say to him, Mark, is give it another 40 years, you'll be able to say that, but much greater length, but with much less meaning.
Yes. But I did talk to another couple. I have spoken to another couple of adults, actually, who are the Not We, and they did watch it. And strangely, they didn't find it at all bothersome. They just sat and let it wash over them. And I think that's the problem, because we're invested in it to a different degree.
Yeah.
We can't just let these things wash over. They affect us in a much deeper way, unfortunately. I think I've already said, didn't I, about change, that it's just because you like previous changes and previous revelations of lore, like the Time Lords, Gallifrey, etc., it doesn't mean that you have to like all of them, does it?
No. But at the same time, I suppose we can't say that, we can't just pick and choose the ones we like. Well, we can pick and choose the ones we like, because as we always say, we're not demanding that things change. We're not demanding that people be sacked or recast.
No, not at all.
We're just saying that we don't particularly like it, so we can say what we like.
Oh, I'm very happy that people have enjoyed it and seem to have got a lot out of it. Good for them.
I think, wouldn't you, that one advantage of having a lifelong fan in charge would be he'd know his stuff? Well, wouldn't it be amazing? Wouldn't it be amazing to see a Cyberman regenerate? First of all, actually, the one good thing in this was where Graham, they all hide inside Cyberman suits.
Mm.
And then Arshad comes along and is looking in their eyes.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite good, but it makes no sense, because these aren't hollow suits of armour they're wearing. That leg isn't a hollow suit of leg armour. It's actually a prosthetic leg.
Mm.
Let's imagine that Sandman's got a completely prosthetic arms and legs, and he regenerates. His new body would create new arms and legs, which would fit where. So that's why that makes sense.
It would be tight in there, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And although that bit about them hiding inside the suits is actually quite visually effective, I'm not sure it's enough to wipe away the whole purpose of Cybermen. One, to wipe away what their bodies actually are. And two, which is the purposes, which is to improve their own bodies, to take humans and upgrade their bodies. It isn't to wipe out all organic life and become robots. It also misunderstands regeneration. It doesn't bring you back from the dead. It stops you from dying, so it doesn't matter if the Master's kept all the dead Time Lords on ice. Quite how he managed to do that on his own, I don't know. Sticking them in cyber suits won't make them regenerate. He's either putting the Time Lord dead bodies into cyber suits, which I think is what, yeah, I think that's what he's doing. The Doctor said the Master's creating a new race of Cybermen using Time Lord bodies. But either way, it wouldn't work. And I can't be made to ignore that by saying to myself over and over again, oh, it looks amazing. That bloody Time Lord outfits they had them wearing, it just looks silly.
Oh, do you know, but I have to say,
oh, you didn't.
I do enjoy a little bit of camp silliness in my Doctor Who. And yeah, I didn't mind. Just for one episode, a bunch of... Are we calling them Cyberlords? I don't know why they're called Cyber Masters.
No,
that doesn't... apart from the Master's ego, I suppose. But I thought it seemed like the crazy camp thing that the Master might do.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine, you know, I just don't think it looked impressive. But I can imagine Chris Chibnall thinking it in his teens. Oh, doesn't that look amazing? Shall we gloss over the death particle?
Yeah, that wasn't... Yeah, again, not fantastic.
I mean, I enjoyed that conversation between Ashad and Sacha Dhawan's Master that they have. Mm-hmm. And I love the Master's responses, like, you'd be robots, which were very believable. But Ashad's actual, I couldn't understand his motivation to go towards true automation.
Yeah.
It seemed odd. And also, if he sets off the death particle, surely that's going to kill him before he has a chance to...
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, let's gloss over the death particle. Yeah.
If they're going to do away with everything that Cybermen are, then why use them at all?
Mm.
Why not just use something else, like something silly like a Toclofane or something? But then that comes up with this, exactly as you say, three times in the last 5 years, we've had the Master teaming up with the Cybermen. She shocks us by having the Master take our dead and make them into an army of Cybermen in the dark water death in heaven. And then he shocks us by having the Master taking the Time Lords dead and make them into an army of Cybermen. And then what else did they do? They have the Doctor agonising over whether to push the button on the bomb.
Yes,
to wipe out herself and all the baddies. And while he's doing this, the chief baddie, the Master, taunts her. That, oh, if you press that button, that'll make you as bad as me. What does he say? He says, if I'm not sure if it's written down in front of me.
Become death. Become me. Oh, come on. Oh, come on.
Oh, hang on. Didn't that happen in Parting of the Ways? Where the Ninth Doctor is about to try and press that lever which will destroy him and all the Daleks, and the Emperor's Dalek says...
You really want to think about this. Because if I activate the signal, every living creature dies.
I am immortal.
Do you want to put that to the test?
I want to see you become like me. Hail the Doctor, the great exterminator.
I'll do it!
Then prove yourself, Doctor. What are you, coward or killer?
It's just exactly the same. Let's round off the absence of originality. The Doctor returns to the TARDIS. Someone arrives unexpectedly. And the episode ends with the Doctor going, what, what, what? Which is exactly what happens at the end of Doomsday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the words of our favourite restaurant chanteurs, Mark, I bet you've heard this one before. That'll mean nothing to Hayden.
No.
I've almost exhausted myself now, so carry on.
Funny enough, I did think of that, of the restaurant in Secret Army when I was thinking, you know, you've got the Matrix there. What would be a nice place to see the Doctor and the Master sat having conversation? And I thought they could be sat in the Candide being waited on by Albert whilst they have a discussion and he shows her the origins of the Timeless Child over dinner. would have been a lot more interesting.
Absolutely. Oh, of course, actually, it really would work, wouldn't it? Because in Spyfall Part 2, the Master actually was an SS officer, wasn't he? No, it couldn't. It couldn't happen. It couldn't happen there. We're just being silly, aren't we?
Good evening, Herr Sturmführer.
And so? I'm so glad you could find the time. My best table is reserved for you.
Why would you give Gallifrey to the Cybermen?
You're about to have much bigger things to think about. I told you before that everything you knew was a lie. Well, now you get to face the truth with me at your side.
I can recommend that that is
all. Do you really think I'm going to believe anything that comes out of your mouth?
Do you remember this place, Doctor?
I hope you're enjoying the wine.
Next to the Panopticon, the chamber of the Matrix, the repository of all Time Lord knowledge.
Another bottle of the same.
A databank of every Time Lord consciousness, living and dead. Every experience and every memory. The lived history of our race. I destroyed a lot of things, but not this trove of secrets.
Can I get you an aperitif, sir?
This is what started it all.
Listen, mister, it's an old, old story. I bet you've heard this one before.
Telephone for you, Herr Mancura.
Hello, Doctor, is that you?
Who is this? What do you want?
Simply to say goodbye, Doctor.
Although, to be fair, I think the Master's probably had enough of Nazis by the time he's got round to this point, hasn't he? But, I mean, yeah, and the Matrix. The Matrix can be anything. The only limit is your imagination, or perhaps the budget. Yeah. Wasn't it disappointing just to have it as a void?
Oh, yes.
You know, we're used to people in gas masks on little model railways and things.
Mm.
Yeah, give us some of that. Also, can I say a couple of things I thought were good?
Okay.
I think I've said them, actually, because I've said about Bradley Walsh's delivery, haven't I? And I've said about... I liked the guy who played Ko Sharmus as well.
Yes.
And Sacha Darwin was a mixed bag for me this episode. I thought some of his bits were brilliant again, but I don't think I enjoyed him anywhere near as I did in Spyfall 2. And he definitely... I mean, I don't think it was deliberate, because presumably it was filmed before it was released, but bits of it definitely reminded me of the Joker movie, that bit where he gets the Siberian in him and he starts doing a little dance.
Yeah, that sort of thing that irritates me beyond belief, that sort of thing. But then we're all different, aren't we? Some people like stuff, some people...
Yeah. Also, Tekteun, she's an incredible engineer, manages to make this spaceship, the first spaceship ever to leave... the atmosphere of the planet, and manages to captain it all the way across the galaxy and back, which is quite an incredible feat. And then she gets back, and it turns out that not only is she an incredible engineer, she's also an incredible biologist, and spends years doing all these experiments on the poor, timeless child. And yet, despite these, she's a bloody awful mum. I mean, the Master says something about the timeless child. He says, playing with a friend just like any other child. What, on a bloody cliff top? Who lets their child go and play on a cliff top? Hey, are you going to have a nice bit of fun? Eh?
That's one thing that I did find entertaining. When she had the timeless child on that couch and messing around, and it kept regenerating, and imagining all the worries that were going through Chris Chibnall and his team's heads. Because if you notice, it goes from black child to brown to white, and then it goes through it again, I think, almost as if it's going in turn. And I thought, you wonder if they were saying, right, now, do we have a black girl going to a brown girl, going to a white girl, and they go to a black boy? Or should we have a black girl going to a black boy? Because it was very... I have no issue with that at all, but I just thought it the way they did it makes it... It almost screams, we're doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Box ticking. To stop anyone ever being able to complain again.
I felt a bit like that when Graham was playing cards in Can You Hear Me? You know, his friends were, again, seemed very much an attempt at box ticking.
Yes, yeah,
which I don't mind, but sometimes it's so obvious that it's almost comical, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Whereas I think... I've said this before, but one of the great things that Russell achieves in series one is that he has Rose having a black boyfriend, and it's never mentioned. You know, if that was a soap opera, they'd be desperate, wouldn't they? Oh, let's have a story where Rose's parents don't like Mickey because he's black, or Mickey's friends don't like Rose or treat her badly because she's white. But they just completely ignore it, which is the way to do it. And although they don't actually say in this, oh, look, they can be any colour, they make it so obvious that they're screaming it, that it becomes a little sort of artificial. One thing I'd like to say, and this isn't me, I picked this up online, but I think it's very funny. Towards the end, the Doctor, she's sort of chiding the Master and telling him, you know, actually, I'm not defeated at all. And she says this to him.
You'll have to try harder than that. You've given me a gift of myself. You think that could destroy me? You think that makes me lesser? It makes me more. I contain multitudes more than I ever thought or knew. You want me to be scared of it because you're scared of everything. But I am so much more than you.
Whoever was posting this says, it's supposed to be the Doctor chiding the Master, but actually, doesn't it sound more like Chris Chibnall talking to the fans?
Yeah, it could be perceived as that, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that bit at all. It didn't seem... No. It felt very much like the Doctor boasting. And at the end of it, the Doctor just goes, looks at her with a shocked face and says, wow. Like, yeah. I did enjoy seeing a working comedian circuit.
I thought you said someone working on the comedian's circuit.
Oh, no.
And so it worked so well that Piers Wenger had to release the BBC's third press release during the course of this series to justify Doctor Who. I worked on Doctor Who and produced it for many years, and I can honestly say I don't think it's been in better health editorially. The production values have never been better. Blah, 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 blah. It will always be an important show for us, and we're a very long way from wanting to rest it. That sounds to me like, you know, the football chairman giving the vote of confidence to the manager a week before.
It's a goal!
Ooh, United have beaten Derby 3-0.
Oh, that's a shame.
So, have we got anything else more we want to say on this?
Nope.
Not really. I mean, the only other things I've got left to say are my usual sort of, like, quibbles and points where I didn't quite get stuff, like, how did the Jadoon get into the TARDIS?
Oh, yeah.
Why can't the Doctor make a remote detonator for the bomb? You know, because normally her sonic can do anything. So why can't she just, like, sonic it like she does with everything else? Isn't it lucky that everyone manages to survive a great big cyber ship crashing on the Gallifreyan capital? And also, how did the people in the cyber suits get off the spaceship?
Yes, I wondered that.
I don't know how they did it.
Unless they just wandered into whatever that transit area was.
Yeah, I guess so. And also, isn't it lucky that nobody shot them?
Yeah.
Lucky Ko Sharmas didn't shoot their heads off. But there we are.
Well, to be fair, in return, they didn't shoot him, did they, until it was too late. Marks out of 10? Hayden?
7.
Mark?
I will go 6.5.
I thought long and hard about this, and I'm not being overly dramatic, but I saw nothing worth anything in this. So I'm going to give it a 0.
Oh my god.
I just thought it was that dreadful.
I can't believe it. You've used the death particle.
It's here in my chest. Which means that in 10th place, with 13.5 points from the three of us, was the episode we've just reviewed, The Timeless Children.
Bloody hell.
Lord. You've done that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, honestly, I didn't do that deliberately. I've almost a couple of days after that thing, I was determined to give it a zero.
Is that because you had the death of everything within you?
Yeah. In 9th place with 15 points, won't surprise you to hear, was Orphan 55.
Yeah, the true worst episode of Series 12.
No, see, for me, I'd still say Praxeus. Yeah. But there we are. I know I'm pretty much alone on that.
In 8th place with 17 points was Ascension of the Cybermen. In 7th place with 18 points was Can You Hear Me? Just ahead with 18.5 points in 6th place was Praxeus. In 5th place was Spyfall Part 2. In 4th place with 23.5 points was Spyfall Part 1. In 3rd place with 24 points was The Haunting of Villa Diodati. In 2nd place with 25 points was, yes, it seems ages ago that this was on, Nikola Tesla. And in 1st place, it won't astonish you, with 28 points was Fugitive of the Judoon. Now, which of us was the most positive, do you think?
It's going to be me.
Hayden gave the most points with 76.
Mm-hmm.
Mark gave them 71.
Yeah.
And I'm trailing a little behind with 58 points.
That's still over half of the available points that you can give these things, though, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, and I've given an average of 7.1 an episode this season, so that's...
Yeah, I've given 7.6, so yeah, that's much better than last year. Definitely.
Yeah. So I think things are on the up.
Mm.
I mean, like I say, I'm just worried about how this new reveal is going to, if it's going to overburden the series as opposed to anything else. We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, we will.
So, it only remains for us to say, hang on, Mark.
Mm.
What's that noise?
What noise?
You hear running water.
Oh, is someone in the shower?
Excuse me, who's in the shower, please?
I'm the Doctor.
It was all a dream!
Right, so I think we've come to an end there. And so it only remains for us to... Hang on. Who's this coming down the corridor? Oh, I don't believe it! Big Sally! What are you doing here?
I've come to ask you not to dump bodies in the river, my lords.
Big Sally, there are evil impersonators in Sector 27.
It's such a disappointment for a girl.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dun Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydunpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at Diddly Dun. On Twitter at @diddly_dumb or email us at diddlydumbpodcast@yahoo.co.uk.
Diddly Dum is liquid podcasting. Stick it in your ear, old sunshine.